welcome to the Council of Moms, the place where we come together and figure out life's problems neatly and succinctly. Just kidding. Where we share ideas, laughter, some tears, and just a real good friendship, I think, in order to get through all the things that we need to get through in life and also to enjoy the things that we want to enjoy in life. The Council of Moms, one small chat for us, one giant leap for momkind.
Yes.
You know, that's a good one. Perfect. How about this? Yes. Council of Moms, don't pull your hair out alone. We'll pull our hair out together. Or if you're perimenopausal, it'll just fall out. It's fine.
Happening.
Don't even worry about
yes.
it.
Yes.
Well, I'm so excited for this council to assemble. I'm Lisa Valentine Clark, host of the Council of Moms. I have been momming, parenting, however you want to say it, for a little over 27 years. And one thing that I've learned is that you can't do it alone. And if you think you're doing it alone, then you're not looking around. And you don't have to do it alone. And I'm grateful to prove that with this podcast. I'm super excited for Michelle, Emily, and Julie that we have today. Please introduce yourselves.
Yes. Hello. I'm Michelle Loveday. I am a mom of 5.5 kids. I have a fun addition that came into our family as an adoptee niece daughter. So she's the 0.5. I can't fully claim her all the way. But we are in the ages where we have the 4 adult children and 2 school-aged children, 16, almost 17, and 13. And so we're in the thick of it. And honestly, I agree. You're not alone. You have to reach out and ask so that you don't feel like you're drowning, because sometimes in that moment, you feel like, I'm the only one going through this. But then thanks to resources and, you know, groups, you can find out you're not in it alone. And no, you're not crazy. The kids just don't listen. And if they did, it would be so much easier.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Emily Campbell. I'm the mom of 3, 22, 18, and 9. So we've got the big, huge gap. And it kind of keeps me young. And then it also kind of makes me crazy and insane. So I'm an older mom of an elementary schooler. And then I'm also a special needs mom. My 18-year-old is severely disabled, autism, epilepsy, OCD, ADHD, all the things. He's nonverbal, diapered. He has dozens of seizures every day, and he needs, round-the-clock medical care. And that's been my life for the past couple decades. And so I'm very much in the trenches of advocacy and, support and all of the things, special needs.
Hi, I am Julie Suazo. I have 5 children, 16 to 3, and they're not spread out well. I had 3 of them super duper close together and raised those thinking we were all going to move on with life. And then we adopted our 4th, and then we added a tiny baby 3 years ago. So she's the light of our world. I'm also an actress by day, so I'm acting like everything's fine.
And you don't have to act here on the council, but,
no.
but we appreciate it.
Everything's fine.
Isn't being a mom the best acting gig you could ever
say?
Oh,
I mean,
put it together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When they
I'm
come
acting at, like all my needs are met.
Yeah.
And like I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Or I'm acting like I'm not totally livid right now and mm-hmm. I don't want to scream and
that
yell.
Didn't shock and surprise me what just happened.
I'm acting like I'm thinking about it instead of counting to 10 so that I don't go, what? Yeah.
And then I hang up the phone afterwards and I'm like, I did really good with that phone call. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I did not
you
lose
gotta
it. You
got to congratulate yourself, right? Well, today's
I'm
question.
I'm acting like I like Minecraft.
Yeah.
Totally.
Or Pokemon. Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. Hi. Okay, today's question is very specific. So I think this is great. And I'm excited to hear what you guys have to say. Hey, moms, someone suggested to me that I should consider getting my oldest evaluated for an IEP. I'm embarrassed to say that I had to look up what that was, and now I'm feeling super overwhelmed and torn. This child has been struggling a little bit more lately, but I don't want to overcorrect, especially if that makes them feel or look different to their peers. One of our much younger kids has a disability and will definitely need more help once they are school age. I just didn't expect to be making decisions like this so soon. Aww. It feels like a point of no return, and I don't know what I'm doing. I can't even talk about it without getting choked up and weird. It's very painful. I don't know why. Has anyone been there? Got any advice for me about IEPs?
Oh, my goodness. I think all three of us are like,
yeah, help this mom. Oh, what do you think, guys?
My first thought as I'm like listening to that, well, she's feeling embarrassed to say that she didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
Please, if you don't know what you need until you need it. So that's okay. So hopefully she can forgive herself for the embarrassment. And it is overwhelming. And so my first thought is, please, please, please involve the school and the educational professionals that are there, because they can walk her through all the possibilities, what it looks like and what it means. I mean, basically, when you think about an IEP, it's an individualized education program, right? It's every one of us probably had something like that, just not as official on paper. And here's the good news before we get into it, because I feel like we're going to keep talking about it for we could talk about this for a long time between the three of us, the four of us, is the good thing about an IEP is it's not forever, right? Mm-hmm. When, you know, it's one of those things where you're looking at how your child's brain operates, what they need, the supports that they need to be put in place. Some things might be forever depending on the disability. If it's, you know, an amputated leg, I don't know why this child needs to go on an IEP. However, and if it's something academic for math or English or behavior supports, the goal is to teach the child how to operate in this world so that they can thrive. It goes up to 21, so it supports them in college, and we can teach them how to advocate for themselves if they're able to do that. So there's different variances of what an IEP looks like. I don't know the mom's, you know, she said he's been struggling a little bit, so it sounds like it's an academic concern, and you don't want to overcorrect. Well, that IEP, that individualized education plan, will be put together by the teachers. And here's the best part. They have to do assessments and, you know, tests and remediation first to figure out where her child is. She's got to just work with the school. That's my first thought. And then I'll be quiet so that other people can put in their input.
Good.
And then I'll come back.
So good.
Oh, man. She should not be embarrassed. That's the first
thought.
I love
that.
Sure.
I love that that's where we're starting off on the conversation. Yeah. Okay. And what other advice or do you think that she needs to know?
I've been through this for the last, you know, 15 years, and my son has a very multi-page IEP. It's extensive and exhaustive. But I realize that's probably not what's going on here, because her child's already, you know, through some years of school without it. And you don't have to be afraid of it. You don't have to be embarrassed. Nobody even has to know that her child has an IEP. The other kids
they
in the class
know.
They shouldn't know. They shouldn't have any idea. And also, there are lots of other options besides an IEP. There are other programs that by law they have to do, or maybe it's behavioral. Maybe it's just some extra like academic resource. Or sometimes you can just talk to the teacher and have some agreements with the teacher. Like, it doesn't have to be an exhaustive IEP.
Give me an example of that, because for
like
someone who's unfamiliar, they might not know.
A 504 plan is, I mean, it's legally binding just like an IEP is, but it's not as exhaustive. It usually is for a lesser, milder issue or disability, like a dyslexia or ADHD, or maybe just some behavioral things.
Yeah, and then with that 504, they can those are great. So if he's struggling, and as opposed to 50 math problems in the classroom, he just has to do the odd number math problems or the even number math problems to show success. So there's levels of it, right? And there's contracts that can be signed. And the similarities of a 504 and IEP is every year it has to be re-examined. They don't just lock
your
child in.
How do you know which one that you want?
A 504 is usually the precursor. So they'll go in and every kid will start. You usually have to have a 504 plan in place before an IEP is tested for. So also, the only thing worse than than having an IEP is not having an IEP. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like we struggling. Sat with it for a while and okay. we really struggled yeah. for a long time. The testing that they'll do at the school is a pretty intensive and expensive mm-hmm. test if you do it outside of the school district. So yes. it is a gift.
So let the school
it's do it. It's a beautiful oh, gift okay. that they are willing mm-hmm. to give you and that they legally have to give you. Mm-hmm. So yeah. asking for and advocating for your child to have that, you actually, as soon as you say, I would like them tested, mm-hmm. then the district has to start testing. But you have to ask. A lot of times they'll wait without it.
Yeah. And we're hoping that this question is coming from a mother who's at a public school. Mm-hmm. That is an automatic. Now, if this is a private or a charter, there's two different ways. And so if it's a private or a charter, they're typically partnered with a public school and they have a contract where they can utilize the public school's resources. And if they're at a private or charter, she's going to have to look into a little few different avenues because typically private and charter schools do not have the resources within staff and on staff. So we're talking as if this is a public school where it's free, the school can, you know, do it. And yeah, Julie's right. Those tests are expensive. So let the school take care of it.
If your child qualifies for those things, it opens up a whole bunch of doors for services. Mm-hmm. And I'm
well, that sounds like good news. So tell me a yeah. little bit about yeah. those services.
I'm of the mind that, like, any service you qualify, get all the services. You know, do you need just some extra resource at school, or do they need speech therapy or OT or a ABA therapy for behaviors or whatever? Like Julie said, the public school is an amazing resource for that, because if you qualify for those services, then they're guaranteed. You're not paying for them. I mean, all it can do is make your life better, your child's life better. And yeah. that's really, I mean, I'm a huge advocate for whatever your child is struggling with. We have to make sure their life is as good as it can be yeah. with those struggles or with a disability or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Yeah. There also needs to be less fear around the idea of it, because your kids are pulled and tested for things all the time. They're getting state mm-hmm. testing. They're mm-hmm. getting, so there's not going to be this weird thing where the kid goes out. It also, mm-hmm. it will not include a diagnosis. So it's not, mm-hmm. you're not necessarily going in and finding out that your child has autism, right? That might be something yeah. that's a lot more extensive, or it's done in line with a doctor. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that it's like, oh my God, my kid is struggling, and now we're at a point where I'm living mm-hmm. a life with, you know, this is a new diagnosis and you're having to, you know, live
even
through that
if this
and kind
mom
of feel out what that looks
like.
Right.
Oh, this is the point of no return. You're saying that's not mm-hmm. true, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, no, this is just more
best.
Help.
It's the beginning.
It's the best. Mm-hmm.
And it could just remain for a couple of years. It's
yeah,
not forever.
And that's yeah. what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I've
my
seen
kid just
success.
Graduated as IEP.
Yeah. And it's a celebration. It's what every, yeah. To graduate your IEP is what every special ed and principal wants. And it's a wonderful thing, and it can and should happen if it's an academic support and, you know, the meetings that happen, they, like I said, they meet with you each year. They meet with you prior to signing it. You can also suggest different things to add mm-hmm. onto it. You can also bring a friend next to you that's more knowledgeable. So, mm-hmm. I mean, call one of us and we can sit in on the meeting and just say, okay, that sounds funny. Why do you want that? And it's an asset-based thing, because then they could look at it and say, wait a minute, we don't need an IEP. We actually need to just accommodate mm-hmm. this and maybe pull him out and go to a higher math, right? Like, it could be like, your kid is actually gifted and we found this out. But it also is a support where your child won't struggle. And it's a really fun, joyful thing. It is scary because you're like, well, what if I fail? You won't, because the school calls you, right? My child's on a 504 and mm-hmm. because everything's been going fine, I got an email saying, oh, we need to look at your child's 504. We have a new school year. And I'm like, oh, yeah. So then as we were looking at it, we made this 504 when the child was in fourth grade. Now is in 11th grade. There's some things that we don't need anymore, right? The distractions to taking tests, we can throw that off. And then we review it, sign it, and everybody's on board, the teacher, the special ed teacher, the principal, myself, and the student, right? The student is involved in this along the way. And so it's great.
My child,
that's
too,
great.
With the IEP, it's really nice as it moves from year to year, because what it does is introduces a teacher to the issue and I don't have to go on and have a new conversation, right? Sometimes having to go and have that beginning of the year conversation. Mm-hmm. My son is adopted out of foster care. So there was things we had one of the foster care advocates come to our IEP meeting, and they spoke just to the fact that children of trauma tend to end up being hungry and thirsty more than children with neurotypical brains.
Oh,
so it's a really interesting thing, but we added that to our IEP. Like, he needed more breaks for food, and that food needed to be allowed in the classroom if he needed to be able to get it, because he would just he'd go insane sometimes if he's hungry, right? And it was interfering with the entire classroom and himself and the teacher.
Oh,
but for her to just already know that and make an accommodation, mm-hmm. rather than like, God, why does this kid have to get a drink all the time? It's like, okay, well, trauma brains tend to be hungry and thirsty more. And now I don't have to come all the time and have like a whole breakdown with the teacher and tell them their entire life story. And you know, he had drugs in utero. This is what we're dealing with. Like, there's a lot of things that just not having to have, even though you may still choose to do that, the level of understanding from your teacher is much better. So there's going to be some kids that, like, you just know. I had to advocate for an IEP. I mean, I think it's wonderful that your teachers are seeing this and that they're saying, maybe we should test this. And they're probably seeing some academic things. Or, like, I had to finally go in. I'm like, can we please test him? Even though the behaviors were really bad at school, a lot of the behaviors that were bad at school, they were just almost just trying to, like, send him home all the time. And I was like, we have different issues here. Like, we have to figure out what's happening neurologically, like. And at first, the only thing he qualified for was speech. He was brilliant. Mm. He's a very, very smart kid, but it was speech. And so we got speech help, and that got us on the IEP, and then we moved to behavioral IEP. So for me, it was like somebody was just giving me a hug to go, like, I hear you.
Oh.
We're all a team. We're going to figure this out together. And, like, you're not in this – because I was just advocating. Mm. And this gives you the legal protection to advocate in a way that is the most helpful for your child. Like, yes. I had a teacher that didn't want him to take breaks or didn't want – like, I kept talking about his specific needs was that he reads people's faces differently. So if you're angry with him, it's very traumatizing for him. And I was trying to explain that to her. And I had a teacher that just had a little bit of an angry face, you know? And so she did not want, and I was like, listen, I'm trying to tell you.
You
like,
got a little
what would help you?
Yeah.
Like, this would help you so much. So if we can just get, like, everybody on board, the nice thing is like, it holds your teacher accountable. It holds your principal accountable. It holds the school accountable. And mostly, it gives your child room to grow and flourish.
Yeah. Yes. And it's a wonderful support. It really is. Mm-hmm. And because she's, you know, this question, she said that one of her younger kids has a disability and will need to do this. It's going to be a good process to see what that looks like. So when, you know, her child does enter school age, she can be specific on what the child behind this other kiddo is going to need, and she'll learn along the way. And so and just a warning when it's a first time thing. At every stage of this meeting, there's a lot of people in the room. And so it can be intimidating. You walk in and you're like in this room, and every teacher that ever has like spoken to your child, it could be the PE teacher, the art teacher, the classroom teacher, the special ed teacher and her assistant and the principal. And it's like, it's overwhelming for a first time parent to go through it, which is why I suggest bringing a friend, a spouse, bringing someone who's gone through the process and not... They want your opinion. They're coming together to hear the parents' opinion of how this child is at home. And so don't stay quiet, right? Don't, you know, shrink from undertaking what's happening. And then most importantly, also being honest on the form they send home. I feel like there's been times where we'll send home a form and then the teacher will complete the form that has to be paired together to kind of dig down deeper. It's a lot of assessments. So you have to ask, you know, if it's an emotional IEP, they have to answer all these questions. Mm-hmm. Don't lie. Like if your child is, you know, a little offhand at home, don't put that he's an angel and never gets in fights at home, because it won't match up to what the school is saying.
Got it.
And then the supports don't align, and then your child is struggling until they can get it together. So be honest. It's not a reflection of parenting. No one's judging you. We are asking those questions as educators because we want the best for the child. We want the best for the student. And we want to have, like, when you have an IEP, there's specific goals. They're clear, they're measurable, and they're functional goals for that student. And then the services and supports are specialized in accommodations to help that student reach the goals, right? So they're not just setting your child up to fail. They have these goals, and then they're going to have certain things, and then they're going to look back on it and reevaluate. And it's typically beginning with, you know, the reevaluation and eligibility, and then they put it in. And so they typically conduct it every 3 years, but for the first part, they look at it every year to see if the child qualifies, and it's just, it's a really process.
I wonder if this mom is a little bit nervous that, like, with having one child with a disability, if this means that with the IEP that she's looking at two children with disabilities, might be really intimidating.
Whether she's conscious of it or not.
I didn't know I was already going to be there, right? And the truth is that that an IEP, if there is a disability, it's really good for you to get knowing now. I've got some kids I'm dealing with in junior high trying to get a 504 and an IEP started now, and it's significantly more difficult than
it's
dealing
harder
with
later
it
on
when they're
correct?
Young. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think their study habits are affected because we weren't dealing with the issue back when they were building their study habits, right? And so also, if they don't, like, I went in and you'd think my kid would have qualified for all of the IEPs, right? And he didn't. It was just a 504 plan. There wasn't anything that was severe enough that, like, they really needed to qualify for IEP necessity. So we ended up with just a 504 with my other kiddo. And so there was actually some relief, like, oh, okay, so we're not dealing with, you know, some of those things. But also, it is so much better to be informed, especially if you're dealing with any type of learning disabilities or any type of, like, unawareness. I promise those problems just grow. They get worse. They're not, if they're assessed early, if you're dealing with this in, like, kindergarten or first grade, that's amazing to know, my kid is dealing with, like, ADD, right? Like, ADD, well, now we can have this action plan of, like, how to address that. And so I think don't fear diagnosis. I'm sure it's a new idea of what your life is going to look like.
Emily, do you think that that has been something, is that been your experience too with a child with severe needs?
Well, I mean, we knew going into preschool that he would always either be in, you know, a specialized severe disability classroom or have a really, really, you know, highly intense IEP. But what Julie is saying is so true about our older daughter. She started having horrible anxiety issues in elementary school, which we always chalked up to having a little brother who was in a medical crisis all the time and, you know, dad on the road and all the things. And then when she got into high school, we realized she has, like, almost untreatable severe ADHD, and she hated school, and her grades were horrible, and now she's 22, and college is the last thing she'll ever do in her life. And you know, and I wonder, man, if we could have gotten on top of that as an elementary schooler, would things have looked different for her? At least we would have known, you know, what her anxiety and depression was stemming from and things like that. And so this is why I'm like, hey, if you're suspicious at all that your child is struggling, even if it's not cognitively or academically, even if it's just, like, with their mental health or emotionally or
anxiety.
Behaviorally, get it addressed. Like,
yeah, get it addressed.
Get
and
it
you
addressed.
Know,
oh,
it just
wow.
Is, I love how she's just like, I just didn't expect to be making decisions like this so soon.
Right.
I feel like that's the counsel of mom's life. Like, we really, like, in my mind, it was like a perfect picture, and all my children would dress a certain way, and they would act a certain way. And I feel like this throwing her for a loop, you know, is one where she'll have so much support, and she's not alone. There's websites for it, and depending on the level of disability for her child, there's groups for it so that she can kind of, you know, talk to other moms and get an idea of, well, how did you advocate for it? And I didn't like how that teacher was talking in the meeting, and it made me feel uncomfortable. She'll be able to have some support for it. So she's just not alone in that something.
I'm part of so many special needs mom groups from really severe, like my son, to just, you know, dealing with a little bit of dyslexia or a little ADHD or something very mild. And it's shocking to when, you know, as the more you talk to your own council of moms or your own little community, it's really surprising to find out how many people's kids do have 504s and
we're
IEPs.
All, like I said, it's all need an IEP.
It's totally normal.
Yeah.
It's totally normal. Yeah. You know, there's nothing to be afraid of.
I IEP my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. Nothing to be afraid of.
I need an IEP for my life.
I want an IEP.
I need a milk and I need, I know. I'm hungry more and I'm thirsty.
I do.
I've got behavioral issues.
I need accommodations. Can you guys like write me up one for me?
Seriously.
I need to outsource this.
Yeah. So I hope she doesn't feel weird after this. I hope she can, you know, enjoy the journey and laugh along the way. There's going to be some mistakes. And I think the most important part, too, is really talk to the child about what is going on in their brain so that they don't feel different, quote, you know, with the other students. And they know how to stand up for themselves and they can be proud of how their brain works. Right.
And like, also and take ownership. Of how they learn and how they're going to function in the world and go, oh, this is what I need. And they do that with more information. And we
and
have
most
to help
importantly,
them.
Yes. And most importantly, I'm that mom. I'm like, I don't care if you have no arms and no legs. You will play the piano. Like, we are going to do that.
Yes. Yes.
We are not going to let our disability keep us down.
Yes, totally.
It may not happen, but
we will rise
from the ashes.
Sorry,
I made you cry.
This is so great. because it's encouraging. It's exactly what this mom, I think, needs in asking this question. You guys have been very generous in your answers of just offering support and camaraderie and sharing your specific experiences, which I think is the best thing. It's like when you hear, okay, so here's what I did when I was in this situation that you don't know how to get out of or how to navigate. It's so helpful to each other. So, and it's hard to share sometimes these kinds of personal things. So thank you for being generous in doing that. Michelle, Emily, Julie, thank you for being on the Council of Moms. And thank you so much for listening to this. I don't know if you're watching on YouTube or you're listening wherever you get your podcast, but I hope that you will subscribe to the Council of Moms and share it. And as always, if you have any question for the Council of Moms, leave it as a DM on Instagram. We read all of the messages. We connect moms with other moms. We love it. It's one of my favorite parts about this podcast is like the real world scenario. The best thing is when somebody will call me up and say, hey, I have a question for your Council of Moms. I love it. It's so great. The Council of Moms is a production of BYU Radio. Thanks again for being here. The Council of Moms. We'll see you next time.